welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a packed agenda, and we also have some visitors in the studio today.
I know, kind of a live audience here.
That's right. So Todd Bishop's here.
Yeah, and Jeff Sanquist and several other folks back there.
That's right, live studio audience for the first time.
And we got a lot to talk about.
So we got
IE8 RC1.
That's right. We have Virtual Earth SDK and some other SDKs we'll be talking about.
Windows 7, lots of posts on that.
That's right, and zombies may be attacking your local town.
But stay tuned.
But first, our top story.
Yes, exactly. So the IE8 RC1 just released. Mm-hmm. One of the cool things that they've changed, and they go through the blogs.msdn.com/IE blog, goes through step by step the changes between Beta 1 and RC1. Now, one of the coolest parts is the, quote, IntelliSense on their search. So it has a number of search providers. You start typing, say, a product for Amazon. You're looking for whatever it happens to be. In this case, I think it's like digital photo frames. I actually show you the results in line without you having to click and then see the results. So, like, you want to search for a product real quick, you can actually see that without navigating to the
page. Not just the text, but the pictures in line and everything.
It's awesome.
That's hotness. That's very cool.
Yeah, so that's my favorite feature. I'm actually running RC1 right now.
Nice. So RC, for people that don't know.
Release candidate.
So this is very close to the official release. It might actually be declared the official release, is sometimes what happens.
Yeah.
But that's very exciting.
And speaking of that, Charles Torrey has a video with Dean and Jason Upton. Jason's there. We've had Dean on the show several times on Channel 9.
Right.
Jason's their test manager. So he walks through a lot of this stuff, and, you know, Charles not afraid to ask the questions. So what about compatibility? And one of the things they're doing is making sure that they have the ACID test for CSS compatibility to 2.1, version 2.1.
Right.
And they talk about things like people don't even know about, that there's two rendering engines in IE8. One is the one that they built from scratch to make sure it's performant, and the other one is what they call compatibility mode. So if you have a site that you need to run, and it has to run to work, say, IE7, you can switch to compatibility mode and you get that same experience.
That's great. That's so cool. Speaking of compatibility, though, there's one downside right now, which is if you're on the very bleeding edge,
yes,
IE8 RC1 will not work on the Windows 7 beta. So you've got to kind of
people that have that, exactly right. You can't. You can only have one, either RC1 or a beta. You can't have both on the same machine.
Right.
Good point.
But hopefully soon that'll all work together just fine.
Yeah. Now, Scott Guthrie actually blogged, I think it was Tuesday?
Speaking of RCs,
ASP.NET MVC 1.0. So this adds a bunch of new features and even tool integration, right? Mm-hmm. So I can right-click and actually see Add Controller. I can right-click and I can see Add View. So some of the other things, HTML and IntelliSense. So when you're inside a view, I want to be able to say, you know, customers dot the first name of the customer.
Right.
You didn't have IntelliSense before, now you do.
Right.
It ships with jQuery. Now, it doesn't ship with the 1.3.1, which just released as well, but they will by the time it RTMs.
Gotcha.
So Scott goes through all the details that you're going to want to know about, but definitely check that out.
And speaking of Scott, Scott Hanselman also has some great videos on MVC. So if you're just trying to wrap your head around what is this, how do I use it, go take a look at Scott Hanselman's videos. Some of them are based on earlier releases of this, but hopefully many of the concepts would still apply there.
And we got Oxide as well. So for people that are looking for a sample.
That's right.
Standards-based web.
That's right.
So onto Windows 7. So one of the cool things is the Engineering 7 blog goes through everything that happens for disk defragmentation.
Right. So last week we talked about the Windows Experience Index and kind of gave you a sneak peek into that. And so today they're talking about disk defragmentation, which is really interesting because back when it was at NT4 that introduced NTFS, they originally, Microsoft, I remember years ago being outside of the company, they were saying that NTFS would never become defragmented, so they didn't ship a disk defragmenter, and so you were kind of left on your own to go find a third party disk defragmenter. But now it's really cool because they're basically coming out with a really awesome disk defragmentation tool in Windows 7. You can defragment. Gosh, how many times can I see defragment and trip over my words here? But you can defragment multiple disks at the same time,
which you couldn't do before in Vista.
Right. It was just single threaded there, and then you could also it will take bigger chunks off of the read operations that it does and then defragment those in memory so that you're not reading lots and lots and lots of times from the drive and then potentially slowing down your performance.
Yeah, so this is one of the cool things why I love the Engineering 7 blog, because it goes into, like, okay, we did this. You said performance wasn't that great on defrag, so what we're doing is chunky versus chatty. Instead of reading a lot of times where the disk is spinning, we're going to read big chunks and then work on the stuff in memory. Then they talk about simple stuff like users didn't like the fact that there wasn't a graphic. Same exact performance.
Oh, right.
They didn't have the nice little graphic of green and red for defragmentation, so now that's back in 7.
Nice. That's awesome.
So it's the little things.
Chunky versus chatty. Sounds like a peanut butter ad. So Windows 7, so you did a video on this a while back.
Yes, this is with David Washington and Brandon Paddock back at PDC. So this is one of the cool features and probably one of the least known features, but Channel 10 goes into how to install and use search connectors.
Okay.
So what this is you can actually search any of these social media sites. You're on Facebook, you're on Flickr, you're on Twitter. You can search for them directly using the desktop search. Now, the way this works is it's an XML file formatted in a particular way. You double-click it, and you've now installed a search provider.
Okay.
So this goes through step-by-step, and you can actually format the results. So in the Channel 9 video I did, we go through step-by-step not only how they work and the experience that they were designing for, but part two is actually how you can, quote, code one up.
Okay.
It's really just a simple XML file.
So you
can actually build one
own
for Channel 9.
Okay. Where else can I get some?
So the Channel 10 post actually has details, and Chris Perillo, who's pretty well known, has his series of search connectors. So you can search Facebook, Flickr, and just download the pre-built connectors. And the nice thing is you can double-click on them. It's just an XML file, so it's not like installing an executable or you have to worry about viruses or anything.
Nice.
So, yeah, and it's all built in.
So those are Windows 7 search connectors.
Search connectors.
Got it. Another Windows 7 feature, RSS-powered Windows 7 desktop slideshows.
Yes.
So there are a number of ways you can do this today with shareware applications, but one of the features built into Windows 7 is the ability to generate dynamic backgrounds, desktop
wallpapers. I want to flip through, you know, family pictures.
That's right. And you can do that by pointing it to a local folder that you may have sitting on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also do it with RSS. So I could point it to like an RSS for Jennifer Aniston and pull up pictures that keep scrolling through about Jennifer Aniston.
I think you'd want Angelina Jolie, but that's your thing. That is weird. But it's all built in.
That's right.
Is the thing. In fact, Jeff actually built one for Associated Press pictures.
Oh, nice.
So you can go through in the top picture in Associated Press, so that way you get like these just gorgeous pictures. And people have been building them. This is Long Zen's post, I should say, where he walks through on exactly how to build these, and Flickr being the example. Like, just search for nice sunsets, and then you can change the interval, for example.
Right.
Change sunsets every 6 hours or something.
Yeah, that would be nice. I haven't seen the sun in a while. It's been pretty rainy up here in Redmond.
Love Seattle.
That's right. So the Virtual Earth 3D SDK.
Yeah, so this is our friend Brian Peek, who writes for Coding for Fun, had done some examples using the Virtual Earth 3D, but now they've actually released an SDK to do this. So in Brian's examples, he's using a Nintendo Wii Fit board, using C# code to control a Wii Fit board and surfing throughout the world. So he's like literally flying through Las Vegas on a Wii Fit board.
That's awesome.
And with 3D glasses. So the idea here is you have this Virtual Earth 3D where, you know, there's these wonderful shapes. You can actually control how you move through the world.
Nice.
So all programmatically.
So how did, if this SDK didn't exist, how did Brian manage to do that?
That is the fun part of Coding for Fun, which is using a tool called Reflector, because everything was written in .NET code.
Nice.
You sort of reverse engineer what's going on there. And so the cool part is now there's an SDK. Now they're still changing their APIs, so it is a beta.
Okay.
But it's pretty cool to be able to control how you surf the world. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
And speaking of SDKs, there are a lot of SDKs out there, and it can be kind of hard to figure out, you know, where all those SDKs are. But now Karen Meyer has put together a post, which she's going to maintain, which has a list of, what are there, like 50 or so SDKs?
Yeah, over
right now?
50 SDKs at Microsoft. Like, this is great. Like, if you're a developer and, you know, you just decide on some weekend, I want to go play or break something,
right.
You now have the one-stop shop to download them. So a definite bookmark site.
That's right. I see IE8 SDK already up there. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. So conditional formatting in Silverlight Data Grid.
Okay,
let's
so this,
geek out here.
So yeah, exactly. So this is a classic example where people are used to building ASP.NET applications, mm-hmm. and the way they build, say, WPF or Silverlight applications is different, right? And you just need to get used to it. In ASP.NET, you could control, hey, I'm going to loop through the first, second, third customer. If the customer, or maybe it's products. If the product price is negative, then I want to change it the color to red.
Okay.
Can't do that in the way that Silverlight works. Or you can, and this goes through, you can't use the same ways you would in ASP.NET.
By the way, if the product price really is negative, I want to shop there. That sounds like a steal.
There were some developers that found out that you could do that at certain bookstores, if you remember that story. I think it was buy.com or one of those.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Good old JavaScript injection. Negative pricing.
We don't advocate that.
Not at all.
But coming back to conditional formatting with Silverlight.
Yeah, so the goal here is you can actually control how something is data bound. So mm-hmm. you build this converter. It says convert and convert back. You can actually control and say, instead of, say, just changing the background, I want to load an entirely different Silverlight control. So you can load, you can have like a dynamic animation for if something is red or like a flashing X.
Okay.
You can control the entire experience where before you were doing sort of basic formatting. Maybe if it was a price, you were just adding $.00. Mm-hmm. Or if it was an EU, you'd add the EU symbol. Now you can fully control, and this person goes step by step, everything that you need to do to be able to do that.
That's awesome, because that's not easy to do in Silverlight, especially 1.0. So the fact that we can do this now in Silverlight 2.0 is a strong testament.
And it's not even that it's hard. Right. It really is. If you look at the code, it's just you have to change the way you think about it. So ASP.NET developers that are looking to look at Silverlight, it's going to be, you know, 30, 50 lines of code versus, you know, something else. That it's just different mindsets.
Right, right.
And how they do data binding.
Okay.
So speaking of Niners, mm-hmm. Sven Groot actually built something called Uki Dialog, and this came to us from a little guru.
And we hope we're pronouncing this right. Is it Uki or Okai? We'll have to find out.
So the goal here is, and there's a similar project, Windows Vista Bridge, that does this, but you're building Windows Vista applications, and you want those really nice common file dialogs. So picture here shows like a login dialog where you have the nice, and you can automatically pull in the user's picture, everything. Mm-hmm. This is just a set of controls that make it really easy for both Windows Forms and WPF.
So manage code, access this from your manage code.
Yeah, so the idea is to make this easier for manage code developers. So I want an application that looks and feels like a native Windows Vista application. Like this is dirt simple.
Right, awesome. Nice job, Sven.
Yeah.
And thanks for the link, Little Guru.
Yeah.
So we have a new Channel 9 show called
The Knowledge Chamber. Okay. So what is the Knowledge Chamber?
So the Knowledge Chamber is Robert Hess back at it again. So if you're familiar with the .NET show and some of the other shows that Robert's done, he always does really high quality content, but he gets some amazing guests too. So he's been in the company a long, long time, has lots of friends in high places, and he gets them on his show. Unfortunately, we just get Jeff showing up for our show, so that's about all we could do. But on the Knowledge Chamber. Robert's first episode has gone live, and here he's talking about Microsoft Expression Web.
Yeah, so he actually goes through some of the things. You're trying to build a standards-based compliant site, and you have CSS files, and you can dynamically, I mean, imagine the pain of a developer where you have 10 CSS files, and at some point you're going to be dynamically loading them, and all these things work in a hierarchy.
Oh,
so,
yeah, it's a pain.
Yeah, so one of the things, Expression Web has tools where it'll automatically say, hey, did you know this value is overriding this value? It's built into the tool, so he walks through how you can actually debug CSS issues, so you shouldn't be doing your hierarchy in this way. And
wow.
It's all built into the tool. And he walks through with Steve Gutman is the name of the guy for Expression Web.
Nice, nice. Very cool.
Yeah. And love that we have a new show on that.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of new things, this week we announced the keynoter for Mix 2009 is going to be Bill Buxton. And so Bill Buxton, if you're not familiar with who he is, if you think of Scott Guthrie as being kind of the czar behind ASP.NET web development, Bill Buxton is kind of the equivalent for the design world. So he wrote Sketching User Experiences, thank you. And he's also, if you go to his website, BillBuxton.com, he's building a canoe in his garage, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. So Bill Buxton is going to be keynoting at Mix, and should be really exciting. He's a visionary in terms of user interface design, and I look forward to checking him out.
Just an amazing speaker. He's like one of those people like you don't care what he's talking about. It's like, tell me about different salsas, and he's just like, wow, I had no idea.
That's right. So that's cool. And so now it's time for Picks of the week.
Yeah.
And so in keeping with my day job and talking about Visual Studio Team System, this is a new story that we actually missed a couple weeks ago. So this is on Brian Harry's blog, and he's talking about the pre-release of a connector that we just made available for Team Foundation Server and HP Quality Center.
Okay.
So HP Quality Center was formerly Mercury Quality Center, and that was acquired by HP. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of requests from customers saying, hey, our development team uses Team Foundation Server, but our business analysts use this other tool, or maybe our testers use Quality Center. What can you do to help us bridge the two systems together?
Cool.
And because integration is such a key scenario for Team Foundation Server, we partnered with HP to make this available so that if you're using Quality Center, let's say your tester that uses Quality Center to file bugs, you don't have to set up your own sort of bridging mechanism between Quality Center and Team Foundation Server where your developers might work. So this does all that for you. So if I'm a tester, I file a bug, it shows up in not only Quality Center, but then it gets synchronized to Team Foundation Server. You fix the bug, and then I get the notification that it's been fixed.
We're going to sing Kumbaya. Everything just works. My system talks to your system.
That's right. That's right.
So this is cool.
Yeah. So
this is cool.
So tell me about these zombies.
All right, so let's get to the zombies. So I gotta love this story, but it's some folks figured out how to actually hack construction signs.
This is awesome.
So good old Austin, Texas here. So what you do is you go to the back signs, and it turns out there's a small input device that actually has a keyboard and like a tiny display, and they have a default password.
Okay.
So literally, they just type in, like, say, password as the password, and, you know, this system is rampant across all the U.S., so so don't go doing this when, you know, the bridge is out.
And you change it to, say, free donuts ahead or something. Yeah.
Exactly, but I love the fact that some folks figured out how to actually programmatically control these things and change the signs. So.
That's right, that's right. All in good fun.
Yes, so definitely check this out, and I look forward to some scary signs in the future.
Exactly.
Too. So,
awesome. Well, that's been another PAX show.
Yeah.
And next week we're going to try to get Scott Hanselman on, so
yes.
Hopefully we can make that happen.
It's Tech Ready is a local event we're doing here for Softy, so it should be fun.
That's right, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. Right.